Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. If you're looking to grow your business, there's only one way, and that is by building real quality customer relationships. Most marketing software will claim they do this, but they never deliver on their promises, and you need to demand more from your marketing software. And that's where Klaviyo comes in. Klaviyo helps you build meaningful customer relationships by listening and understanding cues from your customers, allowing you to easily turn that information into valuable marketing messages. And that's why 10,000 innovative brands, including all of our clients at Wavebreak, have switched to Klaviyo. Now, what's the secret to building those customer relationships? Tune in to Klaviyo's Beyond Black Friday docuseries to find out and unlock exact marketing strategies you can use to keep momentum going all year round. Just head over to klaviyo.com/beyondbf for more. Link is going to be down in the show notes below. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wave Break podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, the founder of Wave Break. And if you're new here, I help Shopify stores stop leaking revenue. And if one of our clients didn't hire us last year, they would have missed out on over $1 million in revenue. And they didn't even work with us for the entire year. That's the kind of money that your store is leaving on the table. So don't wait around. Don't wait until the end of the year, because you're going to leave so much money on the table from your existing traffic and your existing customer base. If you want to learn more about working with me and how I uncover that revenue, head over to wavebreak.co. Link is going to be down in the show notes below. You just tap on it on your phone and it'll take you to the website, and then click schedule a call, and we'll talk more about how we can recover that revenue for you. And now, speaking of e-commerce and growing your store, every week on this show, I interview the people behind the top Shopify stores and I get them to share their secrets. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes to make sure that you never miss an episode. And today I'm joined by an e-commerce conversion rate optimization expert, Davis Kanal, the founder of a company called Growth Rock. They're a conversion rate optimization agency for e-commerce brands. And today we talk about top e-commerce CRO myths, two really important things that you need to be paying attention to when it comes to your conversion rates. Number two, we talk about the average conversion rate. So if you're wondering, like, I don't know if my conversion rate's good or bad, blah, 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 we dive into the specifics and it's not what you think. And then from there, Davis breaks it down into even more detail, and he goes into an entire list of conversion increasing ideas for improving your store. So have Evernote ready. You got to be ready for this one. Ton of value. And then from there, he packages it all up into the first thing you can do today to increase your conversions. So without further ado, super stoked for this episode. Let's hop right into it. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Davis.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
So today we're going to be talking about how to increase conversion rates for e-commerce stores by optimizing your user experience. But before we get into that, what is your story, and like, how did you get into e-commerce, and how did you start this like niche? You run a very niche agency. So how did you get into this? And you can, like, when you explain that, like, can you just tell us a little bit more about what you do as well?
Yeah, great question. And I'm going to try and make it as concise as possible, because it is an extremely circuitous route that I've ended up here. So at the beginning, it's that education-wise, believe it or not, I actually have an engineering PhD in like materials engineering and things. And so people that know that really ask, whoa, how, like, you're A/B testing e-commerce sites? What does that mean? And why are you doing that? And the answer is that it just took one little step at a time that did not seem particularly adventurous, but the sum of all of them led me very far from the original location. So it was just slowly going from science to business, and then business to like web-based businesses, then web design. And this one current underneath all of that that led here was that I always had the design side. It started off, believe it or not, in presentation design. I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area, where there's a huge startup community. So there's a lot of people doing pitches to investment pitches and VCs. And so I was literally charging for doing professional presentation design. And that has this whole persuasion, copywriting, design, how to get a message across, right? So you can already see the themes of CRO coming. Although at that time I had in mental space no idea what this even was, much less that I was going to be doing it. And then that morphed to web design. And at some point, a mutual contact or someone we know, a guy named Brian Harris that I was working with, said, why don't you do this thing called A/B testing? And at that point, I forget what year it was, but it was years ago at this point, I had to be like, what is that? And as many people know, CRO and A/B testing has only recently, and it's continuing to spike in popularity. And so I researched that, and that melded all the way back to my engineering personality traits of, whoa, I can do design from a data-driven way, looking at statistics and conducting an experiment instead of just designing off the cuff in this whole like debate how our homepage or how our product page should look perspective, but instead create a hypothesis, conduct an experiment, see data, and let the users decide what's best. That was transformative. And at that point I was hooked, and one thing led to another. And at some point we focused exclusively on e-commerce, because that's where a lot of A/B testing has just really good ROI, right? There's an immediate transaction that happens. Sites can be really complex. There's a nice sandbox to play in. There are category pages which have unique quirks versus PDPs. There's this whole shift to people buying e-commerce stuff and browsing products and purchasing on mobile. And there's a whole bunch of challenges there. And it was just a really interesting space. So I hope that was concise enough.
No, and it makes a lot of sense. Like, I think you said it perfectly, and it makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, everything, like, you literally have a brain for A/B testing is what it sounds like. Like perfect, like the design and the analytics and the data and the science side of things.
Yeah, it was like I had discovered sort of this perfect, someone was like, here is the perfect spouse for you in terms of the work life. And I was like, where have you been? A/B testing. You meld all of my characteristics in one. It was great.
That's beautiful.
Not to say this hasn't been without challenges, but.
No, but still, yeah, that's awesome. And so that gives us a great starting point. And yeah, that's a great story. Love how you got into it. So like the first place I want to start at, and we kind of touched on A/B testing, conversion rate optimization already, but like first things first, like what is the, I want to kind of set the frame. So like what's the average conversion rate that you see for online retailers? Like what's low, and then like what's like a really good conversion rate?
Yeah, so that is a popular question, and it's a question that CRO folks like me, including me, we just feel so uncomfortable when we get asked it, because because there is no answer. The strict definition in our community, in for folks that do this, is that we can't answer that question, because it's so dependent on the site. And I know everyone listening has that question, because I've been asked it so many times by e-commerce store owners, managers, like, is our conversion rate good? You know, hey guys, this is what we convert at. Is it good? Can we get to this percentage? But the analogy is like saying, like, you know, what's a good, revenue amount, or what's a good CPC for our like Facebook ads for e-commerce? Well, what are you selling, right? So if you're selling like boat parts, right, it's going to be very different than if you're selling jeans. If you're selling to, you know, 16 to 25 year olds, it's very different than if you're selling to 40 to 65 year olds. So we've been talking to a company that sells hearing aid equipment versus a company that sells mushroom coffee versus a company that sells mattresses. So, you know, the price points differ and the intent of the user differs a lot. So one of the highest, I'll still answer the question so I don't leave everyone unsatisfied, right? So typically, right? And then there's a second aspect that is very important, which is an advice to everyone listening, is stop thinking about your store's conversion rate as a single number. From now on, think of it as our mobile conversion rate and our desktop conversion rate. Tablet, like whatever, it's going to be somewhere. Tablets are still a minority of traffic. And the reason is because, as most of you guys know, if you look in your own, anyone listening that has an e-commerce store, you look in your GA, I imagine, and you can email me and tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to
Google Analytics, right?
yeah, your Google Analytics, apologies, or any analytics, but Google Analytics specifically, check your mobile conversion rate versus desktop. Use the segment at the top, check mobile, and or check just the amount of traffic rather. So go to like pages, all content. And I'm going to bet that somewhere between 2016 and 2018, in all traffic, when you look at mobile and desktop, the crossover point happened in this three-year span because we've seen that site after site. So to speak of a conversion rate is tough because your mobile conversion rate is always going to be lower. And when you talk about a conversion rate, a lot of e-commerce store owners will be like, it's constantly reducing. That's because the fraction of your overall blended traffic that's mobile is increasing and mobile has a lower conversion rate, right? And so that's the second aspect. I'll tell you the ranges with just various anecdotes. We have an apparel client that has just a massive sort of just base. It's just a big company. It has a ton of kind of like celebrities that or influencers, let's say, on social that send it traffic, does a bunch of paid ads, and it converts at something like 1 to 3%, depending on desktop, say like 2, 2.5, 3%, and then on mobile somewhere around 1 to 2%, right? That I would say is kind of typical. We see that also in maybe supplements and some health products or whatever. High and low ranges on a particular furniture company that we have. I have to start to becoming a little bit ambiguous here because if I mention a company name and their conversion rate, then we will lose that client because that's right. Very private. A particular furniture thing. So now we're talking about AOVs above $1,000, right? Furniture. There, the conversion rate mobile is, I think, around 0.5%, and desktop is at 2-something. So blended will be somewhere in like the 0.5 to 1%. And that's okay. They still do very well because like it's a $1,000 product and furniture is kind of, there's no like niching down. Everybody needs like couches and chairs or whatever. The high end is what I mentioned. There is a particular food supplement thing that was so specific that if somebody got to the site, they knew what that was. And there you start to see conversion rates 5, 6, 7, 8%. But if you're looking at your site and you're saying, my God, 5, 8%, I would love to have that. What can I do to get there? We're at 0.5%. My answer would be chances are you're not going to get there. Don't compare yourself to them, because if you're selling like some like extract of, you know, ginseng on this particular thing that has this whatever like health benefit, and the only people that ever make it to your store want to like pour ginseng powder all over their salad or something, I'm just making this up, like that's such a niche audience. Right. That's so like already tuned. By the time they get onto your store, like the amount of them that's going to convert is very high because the vast majority of people aren't going to go there. But if you sell like jeans to women, there's going to be a lot of browsers. You're never going to get the conversion rate of a ginseng store, right? So the way you should think about it is a good conversion rate. The pithy answer I heard from someone and I'm going to steal is a good conversion rate is better than the conversion rate you had at this time last year or better than last month or however you're growing it. So compare with yourself and grow that way.
I love that. Like, the don't compare yourself to other things. It sounds like so cliche and just like, oh, we're writing a self-help book, but it makes total sense because when you really break it down, every customer base is different. Like you're talking about like age, gender, location, all these different things. Your products are different. Like some people are selling clothes, which is going to get a lot more window shoppers. Right. And other people are selling more specific products that solve actual pains. And then you get into the details of the advertising and the audiences and all of these different things that are completely like very brand to brand.
If we had clients say, well, Davish, our conversion rate on our Amazon shop is this much. Why is it much lower on our regular site? And you're like, it's Amazon. Like, you have people who are literally paying $80 a month to this website. They trust it completely. They know that shipping will arrive exactly when they want. They know the customer service is awesome. They go there exclusively, like they're ready to buy. Of course it's going to be. And then they make it to shop. Like, so they're not even at the Amazon homepage. You don't know that conversion rate. They're not going to tell you. It's Amazon. But they make it to your store or your PDP. Of course, it's going to be much higher. So there's so many factors.
Totally. And I love that. Okay, so now we know, like, the difference between stores with high and low conversion rates. Like, that's a lot. There's a lot going on there. So, like, now that we're focused on ourselves, like, how do we make the conversion rate better? Like, it's like, do I change colors of buttons, or like, take me from the beginning? Like, where do I even start with this?
Yeah. So I want to start with a few things that misinformation I've heard online, even actually in Shopify kind of online communities. And then we'll move to how we, through our experience, has helped it. So misinformation, and there's just one thing I'm going to mention here, which is, this is a comment I saw from someone who moderated and was this community and had, has like a successful like store supposedly, et cetera. And they said, you need to test everything. Everything, anything could make a difference. You should test everything, like colors and this and that. And I borderline wanted to like get into an argument, and I was wise enough to avoid the situation and immediately close my phone and pour some whiskey. That's really bad advice for two reasons. One, like you said at the intro, we run hundreds of tests a month because that's our job. And I wish that anything could make a difference, but the reality is most things don't make a difference. So let's keep using some of those analogies. If you're trying to sell, like, say, high-end furniture, I just want to pick something that has a high price point, high-end furniture, like, let's say $2,000 plus. Do you really think somebody purchasing a $2,000, bedroom set or mat or sofa or something, that the propensity of them, just you think logically, to purchase is going to be affected by the color of the add to cart button? Like, no, that's a very intentional purchase. If you're hawking some $1 trinket, or these like online guys grabbing emails to like do some like affiliate blah blah blah, and they just have massive amount of traffic from some source, sure, right? But then those things can make a difference because you're talking about a flippant purchase. But just think reasonably. Chances are that's not going to make a difference, right? The second reason I really didn't like that advice was in that group was, it makes the store owners who already have a life where you're thinking like, you're obsessed with growing your business. There's so many things people are telling you that you can do. You're sort of have this FOMO of, should I be on this versus that? Or my Facebook ads good enough? Should I be doing AdWords? Should I be doing Google PLAs and shopping ads? Should I be focusing on SEO? Should we blog? Should we use influencers? Oh my God, the shipping and the operations is wrong, and I need to switch my warehouse and this fulfillment thing, and blah, blah, blah. To then tell those people to, you need to test everything. It's just not responsible, and it's really bad. So let me just put you at ease. The vast majority of little details on your site are probably not going to make a difference.
So what are some of those?
Yeah. So button colors, line spacings, even sometimes fonts and this, that, and the other don't make a difference. There are even bigger things that don't make a difference that we have actually blogged about. People talk about, for example, when you hit checkout from the cart page, there's often this intermediate page that a lot of e-commerce stores have of, do you want to choose guest versus not? This is obviously a Shopify podcast. Default Shopify checkout doesn't necessarily have this. But that page, we thought for sure it's unnecessary. And if we remove it from these high traffic sites and you hit checkout and you immediately get to the start of the checkout form, and there's just a small link for people that already have an account to sign in, we're going to increase. You don't have to do an additional page load. No difference seen with just thousands and thousands of visitors over weeks, right? No difference. Amazing, right? Things like that. So we've changed, we just, so many tests have resulted in no difference. But let me talk about how you can, right, make a difference. Your mission should be this, is to figure out first, there's two buckets, and we have an article on our site called Desirability versus Usability that talks about this. And there's two buckets of how we think of things that can improve conversion rate. Desirability is things that increase the want of your customers reaching the finish line and checking out, how much desire they are. If you increase that want exponentially, they'll deal with little UX problems and frictions. They'll deal with even maybe big ones if they really want to check out. An example of that is, think about really popular concert tickets through Ticketmaster at that 10 a.m. Saturday morning when they go on sale, or whenever that date is. They will sell out in like an hour. And Ticketmaster is an intentionally laborious checkout process. They make it very sometimes like comically hard to do. The other thing is go to apple.com and see how many clicks it takes to get to a store and actually buy. When you get to like a Mac or an iPhone page, there is the tiniest of tiny blue buy now buttons on the top right. It's a joke. Does Apple care? No, because the desirability for an iPhone is so high, people are literally lining up overnight outside of a physical store to get it. Okay. The second is what most people think of, which is usability. Those are UX things, buttons, this, pages, that. They can make a difference. In our experience and the experience of other people that have done it that we talk to, CRO, things that increase desirability move the needle far more on average than things that tweak usability. Because most people's websites are good enough, right? That's the reason. It's like, unless your website's really bad, most of people can figure out how to check out. Right? They know where the buttons are and this, that, and the other. It's a question of, do they want to check out? So things that affect desirability a lot, right? Free shipping is a pattern. I'm just going to start mentioning patterns, and then there's like a system later that we can talk about to really kind of figure it out for your store.
Yeah, let's do it.
People love free shipping and free returns. We find more often than not, and everything I'm mentioning to you has exceptions. We've tested these things so many times. We know certain stores, it doesn't work, but nonetheless, trends. Free shipping, if you have that, make sure it cannot be missed, right? There are stores that literally we were like, you have free shipping? And it was in some fine print on a particular page, right? There are stores where free shipping is mentioned in a promo banner at the top, and in addition, we said free shipping and free returns near an add to cart button and saw a double-digit increase in sales from PDP step, from the product detail page step. Right? So that's a big trend. The other thing is this balance between, let's go one thing at a time. Value copy. If your product has certain benefits in addition to features, this doesn't apply to everyone. Apparel, for example, you're not talking about functional benefits. It's more of a desire to like wear that, right? It's a subjective thing. But if your product has certain benefits, play with which ones to mention, where to mention them, how much emphasis to put on them, right? Clearly. So this entire kind of fitness, weight loss, supplement community, you guys have tons of benefits, right? If you have certain benefits in like parts community, like car parts, boat parts, whatever, maybe yours are sourced from here, there, whatever, like you should mention that. And then for all the kind of like other desirability, think of kind of apparel and like nice to have items, play with photography, because that's kind of the benefit, right? Like nobody says, I'm buying jeans. What's the benefit of jeans? It's like, well, I just want them. I like this pair that looks good. So the looks good is a key aspect to it. And they're balancing obviously price and looks good, right? It's how everyone will shop for things like that. And for those, you can play with some of these bigger factors a lot, both sort of web things, size of images, number of images, where you put them, and non-web things like the quality of your images, literally taking better ones. And for those, like, test it, do it on a couple products, and then you can put it on. We can talk about how to run a test later. A video, does it make a difference? Not. We had a test where, you know, a handful of products had product video. We hit it. They were thinking about investing a lot of money on doing product videos across 1,000 more SKUs. First, we hid the video from the ones that already had it, made zero impact on conversion rate. They were like, great. There goes, you know, we just saved a ton of time and resources doing videos that would have made no difference. Whereas on another site, we had some videos that we auto-played and put in this sexy way in the background of the PDP, and it improved conversion rate a lot. So that kind of like imagery and sex appeal aspect of it can be outside of copywriting. Those things can make a huge difference. Savings, if your store discounts, play with how and where and when to emphasize those discounts. Like on the cart page, do you still have a cross out price? Are you listing out you're saving X percent on the PDP? Are you mentioning that? Like play with that. Coupon codes, right? Play with how much to emphasize versus not emphasizing them. Those are sort of the desirability kind of buckets. Things that on usability we've seen time and time again, minimize your coupon code field. I know a lot of people, so this is a Shopify podcast. Shopify, it's really hard to mess with checkout. Shopify Plus, you can do that. But that's one thing. Promo, keep your cart sticky is a usability hack. I'm doing something that a lot of CRO people that would listen some of them would cringe at, which is just mention things as though they're going to work everywhere.
Right.
Just keep in mind my disclaimer, they're not going to work everywhere, but I'm kind of giving you what you want and then we'll give you the medicine afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, make sure on your mobile cart page that your cart icon stays visible. Make sure that when they add something to cart, it's very, very obvious that they have something to cart. These are very common best practices that the vast majority of stores will benefit from. So I'm going to stop here because we could just keep going.
Yeah. But I know we'll give these people, I like how you talked about how they're obsessed, like listeners and e-commerce people are obsessed with growing their business and they have this like FOMO when it comes to marketing. Like now that you said you could keep going, they're like, no, tell us the others. Like I'm taking notes in Evernote right now. but for real, no, you said a lot of great things. I really like how you said like the desirability thing. Which at first I was like, well, how the heck do you test that? But then you started going through it and it makes total sense. Okay, so now that we've given these crazy e-commerce people who are listening to this podcast, love you listeners, by the way. But like now that we've given them this crazy laundry list of ideas, like what's the process for going about, like obviously with all these things we said, like ultimately with any marketing strategy, with any e-commerce strategy ever in existence, like you want to test it, see if it's going to work for you, just like we were talking about.
Right.
Like every store is different. So like what are the steps that you need to take to, you know, figure these out and get things dialed into the point where you're not guessing anymore and you can have a little more certainty in your store and see your conversion rate increasing, you know, month over month, year after year.
Yeah. Great question. And this is where most things get hung up. It's easy to listen to this podcast or even have a conversation with a friend, talk about these little, some big things that can improve conversion rate and then move on with your day and you're back to like the like weeds of your customer support inbox, right? And never take action on it. So creating a process and a system is important, like in everything in business. So two options so that's kind of the meta thing, is that for this to have an impact that we've seen doing this for years, the companies that start to see an impact from this, it's not a one-off thing. They're not occasionally testing. It has become just how they do work. It's become how they improve the site. Is that culturally, mindset-wise, they either already think like that, great, that's in their personality, or they've learned the benefit of thinking like that is we're going to, whenever possible, right, test and learn and measure. That's like number one. Number two meta thing is they've not just thought that, it's nice to think that, but they've created or built some kind of process to do that. Right? Some fraction of e-commerce companies decide to hire an outside firm like us, and that's sort of our business, to do it for them. But you can also do it in-house, right? Or you could do it by yourself or whatever. It's just a matter of resources and constraints. So that process can be one of two things I'll mention, right? The kind of A-B testing one, and then I'll mention a simpler alternative if you can't pull this off. So the A-B testing one is you use A-B testing software, right? Three big ones in the US I'll mention are Optimizely, which is enterprise, pretty expensive, like $100,000 plus kind of annual price points, enterprise stuff. But VWO, Visual Website Optimizer, is sort of more accessible price points early on. And then Google Optimize, which like any Google product is free until you reach a certain size and then it's very expensive. So Google Optimize would be free. And A-B testing software works like this, just like your GA quote unquote snippet or your like Hotjar and Specklet or your heat mapping thing. You put a little JavaScript thing in the header of your entire site. And as the page is loading, it says, hey, is there an experiment running on this page? And it goes to its software. Let's just use VWO as an example. We use that a lot. It goes to VWO and says, is there an experiment running? And you code and your team codes that experiment and it'll bucket people. It'll randomly, it handles all that stuff, randomly buckets people into a variation and it measures their behavior. It cookies them for those that are slightly technical and it measures how many people were in A versus B. Now, how many people in A checked out versus B checked out? How many people in A clicked add to cart versus B clicked add to cart, right? And you can set those goals or whatever. And then it has nice little graphs in the software. It'll show you, the software even does fancy things like shows you when it's a winner. Generally, you probably should use your own analysis. That's a separate topic. And so that is ideal. So then when you think of A-B testing ideas, okay, we think these are substantive, there are things I really want to test a lot, et cetera, then instead of just sending it to your development team or developers or agency or contractor, you first do it via the A-B testing platform and see, is it no different? I'll tell you now, the vast majority of the tests you do will be no different. That's just life, right? And then, or does it hurt? Great. You just saved a bunch of money by figuring out that it was a reduction before you went. Don't feel bad about tests that show a decrease. That means you just saved yourself from, instead you would have just implemented it, right? Or did it make a lift? Awesome. Like, congratulations, implement it, have it out, and then keep working on your site. If you don't have that process down, then or if somehow using A-B testing software is not within budget, or you can't do it, or you don't have the resources, or too intimidating, the alternative is just what A-B testing people call sequential testing, but what every other human being just calls, release it and watch the results. But it's important that you do it in that way, which is you still can do most of the process, which is think first, the hypothesis step. Make a concrete hypothesis. We think this is going to improve conversion rate. We're going to release this in this way, blah, 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 right? And then design it, debate it, release it, and then put a note, put an annotation in your Google Analytics or, I don't know, in Shopify Analytics if you can do that. But generally, you know, put an annotation, make a note somewhere and say, hey, we released this on this date. And then just try to compare before and after and see, was there a clear increase, and try to learn in that way. That's very imperfect. And the reason A-B testing exists is because that sequential approach is ripe for all kinds of other things. You're reading into things that weren't real. So specifically time-wise, you know, 1 week to another, every owner of an e-commerce store knows conversion rate kind of goes up and down for a bunch of factors. Some ads were turned on and off. You got mentioned here. You got mentioned there, blah, 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 right? Like, things change. And so you may release something, measure the next week, and there could be something that went up and down, had nothing to do with what you just released. And it was some external factor and you're misreading into it. That is the big risk. That's why A-B testing is a thing. That's why we recommend it. That's why we're in this business, because that way you're running A and B simultaneously and you take time away. It's gone. They're running in parallel. People are randomly bucketed at the same time. But if you can't do that, at least you can get the mentality down, the culture down of test and iterate, of measuring results. You can have hypotheses. You can design variations to test those hypotheses. And then you can release it and watch results. At least it's something.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. So I love how you laid this out too, and the whole format of this show so far. Like how we went into first kind of like, here's the problem. And then like, here's where most people are getting things wrong. And then we went into like, here's a list of things that like can be improved or ripe for improvement. And now it's like, here's how to actually improve it. Is there anything like, let's say, I forget, but I just want to drill into this just to make sure, like, is there any prerequisite to, like, I know you mentioned Optimizely is an enterprise tool. Like, is there any prerequisites that I should have in place beforehand before I start? Like, should I A-B test my store if I'm only getting 1,000 sales a month? Should I be A-B testing my store at 100,000 a month, 1 million a month? Is there a revenue number, traffic number that I should really start paying attention to something like this, and it really starts costing me money?
Yeah, great question. So when you're running A-B tests, there's this whole concept of statistics. And this came from like the science world, where people making the drugs that you use, right, have to do test the drugs on humans and be like, control versus not, who has symptoms. And there's some random, they have to know, was the difference that we're measuring because of our variation? And so we use those sort of scientific laboratory-based methods in A-B testing on the business world as well for websites. And that statistics, you don't have to get into the details of the math. It makes a lot of people scared. But let's just use intuition, right? If you flip a coin, which we all know, there's an equal chance of getting heads and tails. If someone tells you, Dylan, oh my God, I flipped a coin, 66% of the time it was tails. Like, this coin is rigged. And you're like, really? Like, that's crazy. I really thought coins would always be 50-50. And you're like, I know, me too. And then you're like, well, so how many times did you flip it? And they're like, three times. And you're like, three times? Wait, so what was the difference between, you know, one versus the next? It's like, well, one was three tails versus the other said two tails twice, right? Or some, you know, two tails versus one head, 66. And you're like, That's ridiculous. Just keep flipping it, and eventually it'll go into 50-50. The same applies to your store at sort of larger numbers. And that's just an intuitive way to understand this concept of statistical significance. So let me give you some ballpark numbers that we often use. If you're getting less than 1,000 transactions, so conversions a month, whatever conversion you're identifying, which for e-commerce, it should be transactions, say, then chances are it's going to be tough to get tests with a reasonable lift, 5%, 10%, 15%, you know, maybe 20% plus you could do it, that will reach with these calculators. You don't need to do the math. There's a million calculators that will do it, and these A/B testing platforms will do it for you. Will reach statistical significance in any reasonable time frame, let's say a month, 4 weeks of running it. So if you can't really do that, you know, if you have 500 transactions and there's, you know, you run it for a long time, 500 transactions a month, which means each variation, if you split 50-50, is going to get 250. And then you run it for a while, you know, a difference of 10%, which for many bigger e-commerce companies, a $20 million e-commerce company, 10% of revenue is $2 million. Like, you want to know if something changes, you know, sales by 10% so you can implement it. But there, it's like a difference of 25. So I'll tell you, 25 transactions, like, that could just be chance. And that whole statistics thing is there to kind of like have an easy way of telling you, is this chance or is this very unlikely that it's chance? So that's one metric, is if you're under 1,000 transactions a month, probably it's too early to do A/B testing per se, right? Past that, good. If you're past 5,000 transactions a month, definitely when you get into five figures, 10,000 plus, like, you should be doing A/B testing. You should invest the whatever a few thousand dollars a month or several thousand dollars a month, either on external agencies like us, employees, using your existing developer and designer time. Like, one way or another, you should do it, because chances are at most stores' AOVs, like, you're making several million. So the revenue equivalent is, I would say, you know, a few million. So let's say 5 million plus. These are not, the reason I'm pausing is nobody has put a line in the sand, right? It's not getting a driver's license at a certain age. And so, you know, 5, 10 million. And the way to think about that, we talk to companies about the ROI is, you know, we have tests routinely. I can show case studies you can see on our site of double digit increases from places like the PDP or like Navbar, which is site wide. So if you do something on the Navbar and it changes sales by 10%, that means all your desktop sales, for example, or if it's both mobile and desktop, 10%, that's like 10% of your entire store's revenue. If you're doing 10 million, that's $1 million extra in revenue, right? If you have a 30% margin, that's $300,000 pushed to your bottom line. So to invest $5,000 a month on an A/B testing firm, that's one test. That's where we say, like, the ROI in us when we talk to those companies makes sense. And again, you don't have to invest it on an agency. You could also do it yourself or invest contractor time or your developer time or whatever. Like, find a way to get it done at those levels. So that's kind of the criteria of when to think about it. Below that, what should you do instead? What if you're below, right? What if you're under a million or at a million, 1 to 2 million, should you test? There's a gray area, obviously, right? But below 1,000 transactions, I can't really get statistical significance. Then do that second approach that I mentioned. Still start thinking in terms of what are our hypotheses of how we increase the conversion rate on our site, and then release them in, you know, some reasonable way of sequentially releasing them, and then measure it. Don't just do what we see common, which is just like you're just kind of like balancing 400 balls in the air at one time. You're just releasing stuff willy-nilly. Every once in a while, you just like load it. You know, so people have different routines. In the morning, they'll check their stats. Every day, they'll check their stats, be like, what's going on? Like, and there's just no tracking or whatever. Even if you can't do A/B testing, getting into the mentality of thinking like a scientist will help you down the road. Because presumably, if you do other things right, eventually your $1 million store will be a $5 and $10 million store. And then you have the kind of cultural ethos in place and the processes in place to take advantage of that. And so the second benefit is if you start thinking like that, even if you don't have an A/B testing process in place, you start to do something very important, which is prioritizing these hypotheses. So even if you don't have A/B testing in place, you'll have a bunch of people, the owner or director of e-commerce or whatever, will have a bunch of people underneath them or on their team or friends and family or whatever, just like telling them things about their store. Oh, you should really do this. You should try that. You should do this. And it just becomes like a lot in your head. And you just start to like pick whatever is like the latest thing that you're thinking about, or someone happened to be in your ear and you're now talking to developers and it's just like random chance. That's not healthy. Instead, when you think like a scientist, then what you can do is, even without A/B testing, just list them in a spreadsheet, in a note on your phone, but ideally a spreadsheet, and just put a simple criteria of, is this going to affect the desire to check out? Just use our desirability, usability, just two criteria, right? Is it going to increase the desire of them checking out? And if so, how much is it likely to affect it? Just use your gut. And the reason I say that is, if you use your gut, you as a store owner or director have a very good sense of the intuitive sense of what your customers care about, right? You know that. And so your gut's probably going to be pretty good, right? And so you'd say like, these are the different rankings, and then start to force rank them. Okay, these are little usability tweaks. So should you do some little button test or something? If you have nothing better to test, maybe, but chances are you have a lot of other things. So if people have ideas of like, oh man, this is an idea of completely changing the way we position and message what this product is and why it helps. We're changing this from ginseng powder as the headline above the fold in the here, you know, right above the add to cart area or whatever, to like, you know, weight loss. Via, like, get weight loss from ginseng powder. I'm just making this up. And you're like, even though that's a small change in terms of pixels or HTML changes or whatever, like, that actually is a big hypothesis. Does mentioning the benefit of weight loss like help persuade customers? That's a big idea, right? And you say, okay, I'm going to move this up my list. And then you just do that one by one by one, and you keep a running list of things that could change it. And that just gets you and your whole team thinking in terms of impact, potential impact. Will you be able to guess the potential impact of things at 100% accuracy? Absolutely not. There are other tests we can talk about changing like little things that we were like, okay, we're going to do this because you want to, but our professional advice is that it's going to make no difference, and we were totally wrong, or vice versa. We told the client, just trust us, let's do this. And they said like, this is a big waste of time and money. And we did it, and it made a big difference. So like, we've gotten many things wrong. There are things that surprise us. So you won't be perfect, but thinking in that way will at least give you a framework to just push away all kinds of trivialities, right? And it'll get you to just like get rid of that minutia that's not going to move the needle that you shouldn't be thinking about.
Totally. And that's beautiful. I love everything you said, especially the testing thing, like how you're always like almost surprised when you test something. Like, it's the same for me on the email side. Like, we'll test something like, oh, let's test this sometime, or test this different content. It's like, it's not going to make a difference. And then it makes a huge difference. And it's crazy. It's never, ever what you're expecting, I feel like. I mean, obviously, sometimes it is. But like, it's just like something always wins. And it's just like, I feel like you do this enough and you're just impressed by figuring out like enough of what works. You're like, holy crap. Like, I was not expecting these to be the winners overall, or like the store to look like this or whatever. But you can't get to that point unless you test and test and test. And obviously some of the things you test, you know, you're going to be right. Your hunch is right. But like, it's crazy once you let the data actually do the talking, which is so great about e-commerce, is you have all this data. So it's like proof, like it's yes or no. It's like the facts. You can't argue with it. It's like no opinions in a conference room. Like, it's like, no, here's the answer, the end. Which I love. And so,
and I'll tell you one hack at the beginning, if I can.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask. Like, what's one of the like first things we can do?
Yeah, one of the things that you got to start thinking of is I glossed over something actually really important that I'm intentionally going back to. Is I said, you're going to have a good intuitive sense of what matters to your users. Okay. Let's dig into that. So that's true, right? But how did you get that? You got that by doing either intentionally or not intentionally customer research or user research, right? And so doing more of it intentionally is probably better. And that is the biggest thing. well, one of the biggest things is really starting to get a process in place to learn continuously about what matters and doesn't matter to your customers, right? And so there are many products that have multiple benefits, right? So we had a particular company that had a benefit of like comfort versus like pain relief versus like environmental manufacturing and all. And those things were maybe taking equal or a particular, you know, amount of space on their product detail page. Well, the product detail page is a really important page. That's where you're persuading them to like add to cart and making a buying decision. So doing user research can help identify like what does matter to them, right? And I'll tell you how to do it. I want to tell you one more anecdote to motivate it. We had a particular apparel company that was targeting plus size women that have very specific pain points around tops and things like fitting and not fitting. And there's just like frustration for them of just buying clothes at traditional department stores where like they're not designed for them and like things don't fit right. And it's just like a really frustrating and emotional experience for them. And their team, right? Their team had just this sense that, oh, okay, they have some particular products that have a customizability in certain areas. And like we should promote that. Most stores don't allow you to customize that. They didn't even know that there was like going to be a drop down in the product page where you could like choose these aspects of your clothing. And we did these little things where on the ones where you could customize this, we put a little badge like on the listing page in the category page or listing page. We put a little badge. So you see these little badges. It was an icon. Our team thought like nobody even understands what the heck this means. Like there's not even an explanation or whatever. And they were like, well, let's just try it, right? They had a great sense that that was really important to their particular customers. These are things that you can't read in a blog post because it's not some universal supposed rule about add to cart buttons. And even to rip on myself, it's not any of the things I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast about free shipping and whatever. It's not universal. It's very specific to that particular customer, right? And that was really important to them. Conversions went through the roof from the listing page, which is often hard to do, right? Went to the roof. What does that mean? For their store, it was a lift that is typically not seen. Let's put it that way. That's because they understood that. So there are things that you'll already know, and you should think about the idea list that you're making in that lens. Oh, is this something that I know or I have a good sense matters to the users or not? How do you know? How do you get yourself to know more of it? User research. Here are various like tactical things that you should be doing constantly. The people making the site decisions, whether you're the owner, e-commerce director, marketing manager, whatever your title is, should be keeping a very, very close eye on customer support, whether that's chat, whether that's email tickets, whether that's listening in on phone calls, taking a few phone calls every day or every week, listening to recordings, what have you. Customer support, talking to the customer support reps or manager, having a weekly meeting with them, whatever it is, they are an absolute gold mine. But structurally, these e-commerce companies are made up where they're just siloed, like their customer support. Oh, you're dealing with customer support? Thank God I don't have to deal with that. Turns out they actually have a lot of information in their brain that you should be thinking about when you're doing supposedly important things like changing the site. You need to bridge that gap one way or another. Second, on page, you can do a lot of analysis of what people are doing. The first thing people normally go to is heat maps and recordings. I don't want to go there first, right? I'll tell you what the heat map of your product page is going to look like. There'll be a lot of heat near the add to cart button. There'll be a lot of heat near the nav bar links. Like it's what every e-commerce, right? What are you going to learn? There's still stuff to learn, but I'm just going to tell you that it's not as important as what I'm going to say, which is polls. Ask surveys of your users. So you can either survey them by email, i.e. with Dylan, or you can use tools like Hotjar, which has a free version or cheap or Qualaroo, these little like pop-up little sliders that come from the bottom. Don't worry about that ruining your site experience and all. In our experience, it does not negatively affect conversion rate. Plus, it's temporary. You don't need to have it all the time, right? You can just do it in a couple week increments to get some data. And ask them questions. Ask them on the cart page, anything preventing you from checking out? Ask them on the product page, like, what do you care most about in this product? Ask them on the listing page or home pages, are you having trouble finding what you're looking for, right? That'll tell you things like, what's causing cart abandonment? Of course, a lot of people are going to mention price. They're going to ask about promo codes. They may mention other things like, I'm not sure about like returns. And you're like, what? We have an amazing return policy. Why is this not mentioned? Or they'll say like, I'm not sure this is right for me. And maybe they're having trouble choosing between your flavors or whatever specific criteria you have. On the product page, they may tell you answers of what values them, right? Why it's valuable. They'll tell you which benefits. Like you just literally count. Go through your list and count, okay, how many people are mentioning this versus that benefit? On the homepage and whatever, asking, are you trouble finding what you're looking for? They may tell you about issues with your site navigation. They'll tell you this because they'll just respond. And then ask the successful customers right after they check out, either by email or, again, like a page on their receipt page. On the receipt page, you can do whatever you want because the conversion has happened, so you don't have to worry, right? On the receipt page, ask them, what's the number one reason why you chose to buy this? Right? And obviously tailor it for the specifics of what your store is. I'm giving you sort of general strategy. And that'll start to tell you immediately at that moment, that euphoric moment of having purchased something where you have confirmation bias, you want to be like, yeah, okay, so I did it because of this. I really liked this aspect. And you'd be like, oh, do we emphasize that enough for all the other people that didn't check out? Right? A hack to do that is look at your reviews. Look at your reviews. And I can send an art, I can tell people later about getting an article we wrote about this, and do this thing that we call a sort and measure method, which is just in a spreadsheet, put your reviews in a spreadsheet, hire an assistant or do it yourself, of just starting to put trends of like, what are the trends I'm seeing in these testimonials or reviews? Like, what patterns do I say? How many people mentioned that they bought because of price versus they bought because of benefit one, benefit two, benefit three, benefit four? And then you'll start to quantify like, a lot of people seem to mention this. These are the people that already purchased. Does our site, so that's what motivated them. That's what they're thinking about when they think of our brand or our product. Are we mentioning that? And if we're mentioning it, is it just like halfway down the detail page or is it towards the top? Right? That'll start to give you more information to add to your already good intuition of what your customers think of. And of course, you're going to discover things that weren't in your intuition. Your intuition is very imperfect. You've just sort of amalgam, like kind of learned about the customers. You may have a lot of ingrained assumptions that are not true, right? So we had a client that really loved to talk about how they were the only ones in the space that used environmentally friendly manufacturing. No one cared. Like it was like 4% of their testimonials out of hundreds and hundreds even mentioned it, whereas like 40% mentioned some other benefit. That was like, you know, the big obvious one. We changed a lot of the PDP, saw lifts that way. So that user research becomes the foundation of finding more of those big needle moving desirability things. Doesn't mean you ignore usability. Some of the user research will tell you about usability. Oh, I can't find this product. How do I get here? And you're like, are you kidding? That's like the number one. It should be easy to get there. How did you not know this? Well, they didn't know it. So like, you got to fix something, right? Mm-hmm. They'll tell you about that, but the desirability is where you'll find these big aha things. And then they affect things beyond A/B testing in your site UX. They'll tell you things that will inform future product development, future products that you're going to size, sizes. That plus size store, we had people asking for sizes below like size 6 women's. So for the women listening, be like, what kind of, they were like, what? We're a plus size store. What are you doing? And then they started to expand. So they said, oh, like there are people that want to buy that are very much not defined as plus size, right? And so that was a merchandising thing that it affected from conversion rate optimizations user research. That's pretty right. Cool.
You know what I love about this? It all goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning. Like, don't compare yourself to others. Focus on improving yourself. And it really, that's what it comes down to. Like, so many times it's easy to listen to a podcast like this and come away with your Evernote full of ideas of things to do. But like, the truth is, you already have all the ideas. You already have everything you need to know, like at your fingertips. Sometimes you just got to dig. You got to create that list, create that spreadsheet of strategy of things to do next. And as we like wrap up here, you've dropped so much value. Like, for the people who are like really resonating with this and they're ready to get things going, and you know, maybe they've tried to do things themselves, or you know how these store owners are, like they're already so busy doing a million different things. Like, where can we go to learn more about what you do?
Yeah. So, as a conversion optimization guy, I know that most people listening to podcasts are on their phone and they're not going to type in a website. So I have made it ridiculously easy. Are you ready for this, Dylan?
Oh man, I can't wait to hear this.
If you text CRO, by the way, that stands for conversion rate optimization, right? It's our equivalent of SEO, which is now very popular. If you text CRO to 345-345 on your phone, it'll ask, do you want to join the Growth Rock mailing list? And what I've done for Wavebreak folks is if you text that, it will also send you an email with, like, I don't know, six or something, some handful of foundational articles that I've written for our site that kind of explain a lot of the basics of this. So you'll have that in your inbox. And then on our email list, about once to three times a month, we publish latest case studies. So we recently published a case study about some things that I mentioned about positioning free shipping. Before that, we published a huge research thing that took us a bulk of 2018 summer to do, where we analyzed page by page the, like, trends and UX patterns of the mobile checkout flows of, like, the top 40 sites in the US, Amazon, Home Depot, J.Crew, like all that. So, and we also sprinkled in what are the things we've tested? Should you worry about this or not, you know, to optimize things like that. And so I've included just a little email with some of those foundational articles, a couple of key case studies, some of that research, some of the strategy that I mentioned. So if you're on your phone, you can just text CRO to 345-345 and it'll ask, like, what is your email? You can put your email in there and opt into that. And you can always opt out. These are opt in, opt out. And once that email is sent, it comes from my email. So you can just reply, ask me any question, ask me about your store. I'll try my best to get through them. I'll get through each one, the timing of which, you know, it may be a little bit slower, but I'll try my best to respond to each one and answer your questions.
Beautiful. I love it.
Otherwise, the actual website, if you want to actually go to the website, is growthrock.co, not growthrock.com. It's growthrock.co. One word.
I love it. So CRO to 345-345, or you can go to growthrock.co. It's beautiful, man. You drop so much value. I really appreciate you coming on the show, Davish. Like, it's just been, like, you've blown my mind, and it's just awesome the amount of detail that you can go on, speaking from experience too. Like, that is just huge, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and to just really, I mean, bust those CRO myths in the beginning, and then going in from there, like, the whole list of ideas, and then from there, like, how to actually take that information and make it actionable to every single person who's listening. Like, that's just awesome. Really appreciate you coming on the show, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. It was fun.
Now, listener, before I sign off, stop me if this sounds familiar. Your email marketing is stuck. You feel like you could be doing email better. You're not generating enough email revenue, and you feel like you're leaving money on the table. But you don't have the time to figure email out yourself or do it on your own because you have a business to run. Imagine this. Imagine not having to worry about leaving money on the table with your email marketing. Imagine not having to figure out what to send, when to send it, how many emails should look, what automation you need, what segments you need, how often you should be contacting your email list, or just worrying about sending the next email. You don't have to worry about any of that. Imagine having peace of mind knowing that your email marketing is generating sales in good hands. At Wavebreak, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue. That's it. We don't do anything else. And we've created a system called the Wavebreak Method that, number one, makes you less dependent on Facebook or other marketing channels. Let's say something bad happens. Facebook says, see you later, Shopify store, and they just completely kill your ad traffic overnight. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress because you're good to go because you have a cushion of email revenue. You don't have to worry about what your wife is going to do or if you're going to be able to make rent or if you're going to be able to pay people because you have this cushion of email revenue to rely on. Number two, the second thing this does is huge. And it's how stores scale from 7 figures to 8 figures to 9 figures. And the secret is repeat purchases. The Wavebreak method gets rid of one-time buyers and increases repeat orders. Number three, it keeps your email list engaged. You don't have to worry about Black Friday and beyond. We'll figure out the ideal amount of times that your list needs to be contacted to maximize revenue, and then we'll execute it for you. If you want to learn more about this system and how we can work together to apply it to your business, go to wavebreak.co to schedule a call with me. And I'll personally send you my calendar link and we can chat one-on-one. Now, I don't have unlimited time to do these calls. I can only do a couple of them per week. So if you want to get your call, go sign up at wavebreak.co for it as soon as possible and we can talk about how we can work together. Thanks for listening to this episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to get notified of new episodes as soon as they drop.